Well, hello out there. This is my friend Johnny W.
Hey.
With Johnny D on the backup.
Drug free. So put the crack up.
Yeah. That's to let you know our
people
generation.
Still smoke crack?
Johnny, you know, I know you're going to be shocked to hear this, but I'm not really up on the drug culture. Like,
really?
In terms of, like, I deal
like, people, like, crack was such a, it was cheap, I guess, and so it became this pervasive thing. But I don't hear a lot about people smoking crack anymore.
I don't know. I feel like a Whitney Houston reference is coming soon.
I think meth took over, right? Is it still playing in the background? the theme song?
I think it just ended.
You can hear it.
Yeah, I think meth did take over, but
yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm here at Bantertown, Johnny. We don't do any sort of drugs, so except Tylenol or, you know. I will say I've had some indigestion lately, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
You're getting older. You can't eat the pizza late at night anymore.
I don't know what it is, because I've had like a stomach of steel forever, but, do you ever get food caught? So this is an old man problem.
Wait, hold on. Your food gets caught?
Like, and does it get stuck in your esophagus?
To your chest.
Well, yeah, your esophagus it gets stuck like right here.
I don't think of the esophagus like your throat.
Well, it goes all the way down, Johnny.
Okay.
I don't know if you know.
But once it goes down further, does
it
become something else?
Drops off into
oblivion? Doesn't it become something else once it's down further? It stays esophagus the whole way?
Eventually, I'm sure it carries
into show me a chart. You're making this stuff up. What's the whole thing about if you stretch the intestines out?
They would wrap around the world three times?
No, I thought it was if you stretch your intestines out end to end, you would die. That's what I always heard. That's like the old thing. I love jokes like that. Like, if everyone across the United States held hands, three quarters of us would drown. That's really dumb.
Yeah, I do. Okay. I love statistical things.
I know, right?
Yeah, they're fun.
Well,
how are you
I'm
doing,
sorry man? You're not. So what do they do for your food getting caught?
Well, apparently there's a procedure. My father-in-law's had a few times where they stretch your esophagus. They dilate it.
Well, they put like a shoehorn in there? Like an esophagus speculum? Can we say speculum on this show?
Like a roto-rooter?
That's not a...
Yeah, I don't know, Johnny.
What kind of tool?
I don't know. Like, hopefully I'll be asleep if that ever happens. I don't want to know. Just put me to sleep and wake me up.
Wake me up when I have a wide esophagus.
And then I'm going out and eating whatever the heck. I'm not even
chewing. Yeah, you just throw back a hoagie.
Like, I don't without
even
chew
chewing, just lodging Subway sandwiches in like they're Tic Tacs.
The truth be told, I don't really have a problem. I just want to skip the chewing.
And you just see people with wide esophaguses, and you're like, I bet they have a great life.
I do.
You're jealous.
That guy has no problems.
Yeah,
it's a strange.
When you breathe
strange.
Heavy, it kind of whistles. That's a weird.
It's like a wind tunnel.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll be able to sing. Wonder if it'll change your singing voice, a wide esophagus.
Well, I don't
esophagus.
Think you sing from your esophagus. I'm
but
not
it's
sure.
a, it's a part of it, I would think. Like,
is
it's
it?
Your windpipe.
You know, I do sometimes wonder, in terms of the acid production, what that does to the back of your throat. Because I do get some acid right now.
What's the old singer's tips, like, if you're having a bad throat, that you're supposed to eat, like, Lay's potato chips?
Was it Amy Grant?
She used to eat Lay's potato chips because the fat and the crunchiness that would like
coated her
would coat
points.
Your throat.
I don't know.
Now they sell things like Entertainer's Secret and Throat Coat. And
I think the secret is there's nothing in it but water. You know what I'm saying? Like
it tastes weird. It tastes like a Red Bull.
Does it?
Or like one of those 5-hour energies?
I wonder what it does exactly.
I can't deny that it works, but it kind of numbs. It doesn't. It's like chloroseptic.
Yeah, and well, that helps, I'm sure.
I think it just fills in all the little cracks and gaps, and I've used it before, but usually my voice holds up okay, unless I'm super sick.
Yeah. I am sitting here, and you were laughing when we came in. I told you I'm having these issues, and then I have a Culver's cup.
You've been to Culver's.
So I went to Culver's with my brother Wes, and the deal is... I went in there. They actually have a really good salad because I've been eating good. They
Hold
do.
On.
I know.
Why did you go there if you're getting a salad? Though? That's not a salad. Place.
Because I like the salad. They have salad and they have soup. So I go
and then
in
they
there.
They have ice cream.
I didn't do that. I go in there
Look
and
at
I,
you.
And I order the salad at Culver's. So yeah. I'm already. This is good. So now I'm about 12 days into good eating. Okay.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And so making better decisions. It's, you want to know why it's so hard as a parent to not eat right? Because for me, like last night, we ate out at Cheddar's before church.
Yeah.
I had the off the lighter side menu, the salmon with the mango salsa.
Yeah.
It was delicious, but not enough. Like I wanted four more of them.
Yeah.
And then Sadie gets a cheeseburger with bacon on it and French fries. And do you think that 9-year-old finishes it?
No, of course not.
No. It sits there and stares at you. Like you can almost hear it talking, you know.
How does the burger sound?
Reet me.
Reet me?
That was my – no, it wasn't.
Long story short, I got half my burger lodged in my esophagus.
If I get that thing expanded, bro.
Oh, it's going to be unbelievable.
It just goes straight down to the bottom. Apparently, it just drops off into nothingness, according to Johnny.
Sadie will never eat again. She's already a pretty lean kid.
She is. She is. She eats crazy stuff. So the Easter candy is piled up in our pantry, and she comes home every day.
How do you stay away from it?
Well, Johnny, at some point in time, the better thing, because I'm the kind of guy that you have to remove everything from the house, or else I'll you know, relapse into bad eating.
So you've locked yourself out of the pantry?
No, I'm learning to. It's there, and I don't have to eat it.
What?
It's called self control. I looked it up. It's called self-control. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
That's a myth.
I know.
For you, buddy.
I'm trying. And right now I'm 12 days in after 40 years of not doing it. But I'm going through seasons where I have. But anywho, at Culver's, I go in to order
the salad.
And what do you think they say?
Would you like a cheeseburger with that? What? They're out of the salad.
We're not serving salads. And the reason is there's some sort of E. coli outbreak or something some romaine lettuce coming out of, I don't know.
Yeah, I heard about this China. They're recalling all the – is it China?
I don't know.
They make lettuce?
But the narcissistic part of my life said, you know, instead of thinking about all the people who have been actually ill and caring about them or the farmers who are raising these crops that are going to lose it, all those things, you know what I thought? You know what? That's just like the universe to stop me from eating good today.
Right.
You know, here I am coming to Culver's and I have all this self-control and I somehow made it about me.
Yeah.
And this is my
confession. So you just didn't get anything.
You know what? I ordered a chicken sandwich and didn't eat the bread. And they have green beans. And I had chicken sandwich green beans.
They don't have green beans
at Culver's. They do. And they're like freshly cut. They're the freshest green beans you've ever had. And they had all these chopped up onions in it. So,
what?
Yeah. I didn't eat the onions. I don't want to smell like onions. I like onions. But anywho, I tried. But Culver's, and I did not get. Now, Wes got the Reuben or whatever, and with green beans.
Wes.
So apparently I affected him positively.
Wes Binkley with REMAX Realty.
Yes.
Give him a call for all your home buying needs.
He's done both of our houses.
Not a sponsor. Because he's not paid us any money.
Wes, let's go find out if Wes actually listens to the podcast.
Let me tell you, though, Wes is a solid dude.
He's a good dude.
He looks in on my dogs sometimes when I'm out of town.
He doesn't do anything for them. He
like,
just looks
how
at
long
them.
Have you and I been friends? 20 years.
20 years.
I don't call you for stuff like that.
No, you shouldn't. I won't come.
Because I just feel weird about it, and that's maybe something we should talk about. Should I feel weird about that?
You called me the other day to go do something, and I couldn't because you needed it
But
done.
I think I'm that kind of friend, too. I think people are like, well, don't call Johnny to help you move. He's probably doing comedy somewhere, and he's not going to be able to – he's going to flake. But I'm saying with you, it's always been like I don't call you for stuff like that.
Yeah, and I appreciate it.
But I'm thinking I feel weird because like Wes and I are not as close as you and I, but we're close. But I thought Wes is kind of my guy. Like, hey, if I need a ride to the airport, I might call Wes. He lives down the road too.
Here's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
Wes has 4 kids.
Yeah.
Like his life is way busier than mine.
Right.
But I have given the impression that mine's that busy.
I'm going to start calling you.
Mm.
Would you feed my dogs? If I said, hey, dude,
get to choose what I feed them?
Yeah.
Anything. I just bring whatever
they
I
have
want.
Had all of their esophaguses enlarged, so you're going to be, it's going to be a dream.
I'm going to bring them the salad.
You can just throw it. It's like, yeah. You don't even have to aim. It'll make it. No, I think you're going to be the next call. It's going to be, hey, can you?
I hope that you could call me and I would do things for you.
All right.
But you know what?
There's a good chance that no.
Right. Well, again, you just tried it and it didn't work.
What I'm saying is Wes is a good dude. I was out of town to Knoxville. It was just kind of a last minute thing. Not last minute, but probably had like a week or so notice. My brother has been fostering, my brother and his family have been fostering a little baby since she was 2 weeks old.
Yeah.
We've talked about it before on the podcast. It's been up and down roller coaster of just foster care is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And So the mother of the child signed over her rights to the baby recently. So it was up for them to adopt if they wanted to. They pursued that. And then they set a date. And then luckily it's a date that I was in town. I got to go be there for that. But I had to like find out. When we leave together, when Curry and I leave somewhere together, we have to figure out what's going to happen with the dogs.
Right.
And we don't kennel them because they're babies. They're just like, they don't do well in, you know, cages. So Wes came over and looked in on them. But we got to go to see.
Let him out and fed him?
He let them out. Day? He fed them. I think I fed them. It was only one night.
Okay.
So I fed them before I left, and I said, hey, come let them out a couple times.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, sure thing. But he has fed them before. He's cleaned up poop in my house.
No way.
Because one time, like, they don't poop in
the
house.
What about the dog's poop, though?
Right. Okay. They don't poop in the house a lot, but every now and again, the timing's off, or they're angry. Who knows what the reason is. They're like, take this, you know. And I'll find out later, like, dude, because one time I came in, there was like cleaners that I didn't recognize. Like, what's this? We don't buy these. He was like, yeah, I went and got some because I had to. I was like, you went and bought things to clean up. That's a good guy.
Yeah. He's a good dude.
I didn't pay him back for it either.
No.
No.
This is his payback right now. He's being honored publicly among millions of
Remax Realty. He's your home buying solution.
He sold my house and helped me buy my new one.
He found my house. He helped me sell my house too. So I'm telling you, man, this guy's on fire.
He should be a sponsor. He should be listening.
Yeah, like he spends marketing dollars. They do that. Why not on a podcast that gets dozens upon dozens?
No, come on, man. We're taking the world by storm, bro. By storm.
Yeah. Anyway.
So your brother.
My brother adopted their little baby.
I saw the picture, and it was really sweet.
And it's sweet.
The party of four picture. Yeah. She's adorable.
They're just – it's so sweet.
And it's such a beautiful thing, man. I mean
– yeah, I was really moved by it. It was real quick. Like, you go in, and the judge kind of – it's kind of cute what he said. The social worker goes over, like, now you know this is non-rescindable, and you're taking responsibility for this child, and you know you're aware of it. And then they sign the paper. Yeah, we've signed. And the judge is just going over the things, and literally he's in there like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then he just goes, all right, it's a girl. And he bangs the gavel, and then he's like, you're out. And then he took a picture with us.
Wow.
With the family. So that was kind of cool. And, I mean, it's a happy day. I mean, when you're in court, it's not usually a good thing.
No.
But that was kind of a neat thing, man. We go down there to do all that. And then we went and had the whole family and Tara, his wife, their extended family, went to breakfast together. And, you know, and I don't know. I was so excited for them because my brother kind of got a late start in the whole family thing. And they've had some trials and tribulations. And I'm tickled for him, man. He called me when he started, like when they first started fostering. He texted me and he said, I said, how are you doing? How's it going? And he's like, I'm changing diapers for the first time. And he was like emotional about it.
Wow.
Like he'd waited his whole life, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, he was in his 40s before he changed his first diaper. And he's like teary eyed about it. And I just thought, man, what a neat thing. So I'm thrilled for them. And they just bought a little farmhouse in Coryton, Tennessee. And they're fixing it up. And they have shiplap, like the gains. You have to have shiplap.
You do.
So they took their tax return and bought shiplap. And I'm just like, it's so funny. We take these and we try to make our houses look older.
Or you can call it wood.
It's just wood. Right. It's just wood planks stacked against each other.
Right. It can, yeah. You know, I mean, I just, the fostering and adoption world, there's such a purity.
Yeah, man.
Such a purity. You know,
you're putting your heart right out there, too, to be ripped apart if it doesn't go well. And a lot of times it's not in your power.
And that's the thing, you know, it really is it's a selfless thing. It's about the child.
Yeah.
You know, and.
I mean, they went out of their way to even, you know, help the mother a few times. There's limitations to what you can do because you can't sway them.
Right.
But like, they want to remain in contact with her and they want her to be part of, you know, it's just interesting. It's your goal. As a foster parent, should be reconciliation of the family.
Yeah.
But at some point, you just go, man, this kid, this situation is way better than what the kid would be going back into. And they've known her. They've had her since she was 2 weeks old. So this mother really never even knew the baby. So she eventually realized that, and it just has all worked out. So I'm so tickled for them.
Well, there's so much. You know, our buddy Reggie Dabbs, you know, was adopted. You know, he tells that story. We wrote a book about the whole story. His mom already had three kids.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, 16 at that point and had been abandoned by her parents. And it's a crazy story. If you never heard of, if you never heard Reggie Dabbs, you can just go YouTube Reggie Dabbs, and yeah, there's just millions and millions of things you can go watch. Because he's just in a different school every day, telling a story. But you know, she was living in an abandoned chicken coop, mm-hmm, on a farm outside of Knoxville with her three kids, and she was getting up in the morning. She was taking them to the gas station bathroom, just cleaning them up, and then taking them to a daycare because they get cared for and fed. And she would work two waitress shifts, mm-hmm, to pay for that bill, and then pick them up in the dark on the way home and then restart that process every, yeah, day. And so eventually she got sick. Obviously the conditions were horrible. I mean, living in a chicken coop, man.
Yeah.
A chicken coop with babies. And this guy came along, and she needed $20 to pay her bill. She was $20 short. And he said, you know, if you give me, or I'll give you $20 if you sleep with me. And she did, because she was desperate. Mm-hmm. And that's how Reggie came about.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we began that story, and I don't, This Is Us does a great job too, you know, of Deja in the story, you know, mm-hmm, of you have these preconceived notions about the mom, you know, and
right,
and the foster parents who are taking care, you know, they're very angry, they're very protective, they're very, and, mm-hmm, and that does a good job of showing that everybody has a reason or a story, or you know, there's something in their life, and yes, it has bad decisions, and we're so quick in our society to hold some people more responsible for their bad decisions than we hold ourselves, especially when we had a lot of people to bail us out,
yep,
of our bad decisions, you know. And or someone to really lead us away. I mean, there's a lot of decisions people in this world are making. I did not have the opportunity to even make that bad, yep, decision. Mm-hmm. I had a mom and a dad saying, "You will not make that decision."
Right.
You know, like there was no way, yeah, I could even do, yeah, it. And
you're not going to hang around with that kid.
Right.
I mean, he's not allowed over.
Exactly. And you don't know then the thread of your story,
right,
that would have been if left, mm-hmm, to your own devices. And so for Reggie's mom, she went to her, it was her second grade teacher, and then her 10th grade English teacher later, the lady had moved, and she just affected her. That's why he goes into schools, affected, mm-hmm, her so deeply. And she went to her teacher and said, I can't have another one. I can't do this, you know?
Yeah.
And so that teacher's family took her in for the duration of the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the delivery room, she turns to her and says, I can't do this. Can you adopt this baby? I can't do four,
mm-hmm,
you know? And the mom agreed. And so when we wrote that first book, it was this amazing story. First of all, you know, it was easy to vilify the mom, and Reggie set out intentionally. And he only talked to her on the weekend, never met her in person.
Yeah.
And we set out to – he really wanted to make up the point that mom, his mom, saved his life.
Yeah, what she did was actually brave.
Yeah. I mean, you could say, and he goes in and says, you know, some of you kids feel like you're worth nothing. You know what my worth is? $20.
Yeah.
You know, and he'll tell that story. But that there was courage in what she had done. And,
yeah.
And there's, you know, obviously so much shame that could be attached to it. And so it was just such an amazing story because there's so much we haven't written yet after that first book. So that, you know, Mrs. Dabbs, the teacher, brought him in, and her and her husband adopted Reggie, and he grew up and found out he was adopted at second grade, felt very like he just doesn't know whose father is and doesn't, yeah, understand, you know, and so that's a part of his story, feeling behind. But that life change. Well, then after the book, I don't know if I've ever told this story in the podcast before, and I hope we get to write about it someday. He came and ate with me one day in Mount Juliet, and he said, dude, you will not guess what happened. He said, I was in Knoxville doing an event, and I got a phone call, and it was a kid,
mm-hmm,
and he said, what are you doing? And Reggie said, how'd you get this number? And the kid said, I got connections. And he goes, no, really, how'd you get this number? He goes, I'm your nephew.
Hmm.
And he was like, what? And so the kid had been in a school, middle school, that day, went home and was in the kitchen with his grandma and was telling, oh, you won't guess who came to school today, and here's what he said, here's what he did. And she goes, what was his name again? Reggie Dabbs. And the grandma dropped a bunch of dishes and broke down crying. That's his mom.
Oh, my
That's
gosh.
Reggie's mom. And so she has his number. They talk. They just nice. After his adopted mom died, his adopted mom made sure that they began talking some.
Yeah.
And she kept up with it. That's the story we didn't know. And so literally, they invited him over. And when he finished his event that night, it was like three. It was in Fountain City where you used to live.
Oh, right.
It was all right there. Their Central High School. And so he literally got in the car and drove a few streets over and went inside and met his mom in person, his brothers and sisters. They all knew who he was and followed his career.
It's crazy.
And the thing that got me, that really got me in the, you know, is they walked in and the books laying on the table.
Oh, man.
And one of the brothers said, the reason that mom felt comfortable reaching out to you is because we all appreciate it. You did not make her out to be some monster or whatever in the book. Like that you had really
honored her. Yeah.
And so that thing, I mean, it just, God, just melted me, you know?
Yeah, because it's easy to do. It's easy to be like, you made bad choices and these is the consequences is you get to be painted like this. You have to have a good guy and a bad guy in these stories. And it's like, no, I think there's more nuance.
Absolutely.
There's choices, like you say, that we all would make, you know, there but for the grace of God. Go we. It's like, man, how many things have I been rescued from that I have no idea? Or how many times have I gone down the wrong path but didn't pay the consequences for it because nobody was looking or whatever?
Yep.
And, man, it's amazing. Yeah, like I said, it's freaking – I think it's courageous to give up your baby and realize, hey, I'm in over my head, but I don't want to have an abortion.
Yeah.
I'm going to reach out for help.
Like, absolutely.
We should encourage more moms to do that than just – to be like, no, you made a wrong choice. You should have thought about that before. It's like, come on, man. Yeah. Where's the grace in that? That's not fair.
Well, I think we often miss the fact that the grace of God is going to come through God's people. When God's people are showing grace, that is the grace of God.
Yeah.
It's not like just some abstract concept out there sitting in a theology book.
Yeah.
That the way, how do you think that's going to reach people? You know, God's grace is absolutely reaching people through, you know, spiritual means. But spiritual means, he has put a spirit inside of bodies.
Yeah.
That's his plan. I put spirits inside of bodies, and that's how. That's why you're the body of Christ. I've put my spirit inside. And we miss that. And I think it's because of our biases. You know, it's so hard for me to conceptualize someone else's choice because, I mean, we started off joking about it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, come on, man. No one's ever offered me drugs.
Right.
No one's ever tried to sell me drugs.
Yeah, I used to watch these after-school specials.
Yeah.
You'd think that, like, everybody in every street corner is going to be like, hey, kid. And, you know, I just did. That wasn't my experience.
No.
And
we weren't rich or anything.
No, and it wasn't like and I went to public school for a few years. It wasn't like, I don't know, man, this idea that it was that pervasive. And I'm sure that was some people's experience. But, yeah, it's like there were choices I was shielded from. You know, we talked about that. We had a conversation about that the other day about, like, starting to reconcile in our minds as evangelicals are starting to come to terms with the fact that, like, white privilege and white supremacy is a thing,
right, it exists,
that we're having to deal with. Like, okay, we've acted like, oh, we had the civil rights movement, this is all over, and you start, like, every day in the news you're hit with something else that, like, how could this happen? How could two black kids in Starbucks who were just sitting around or waiting on their friend, they got the police called on them. I read a story about them today. They said literally they were scared for their lives.
In Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, they were scared for their lives. And it's because anytime the police are called, all they got to do is say, I thought he had a gun. You know?
Yeah.
It's like anything you're holding in your hand can be a gun. It's like we're living in this weird era where we're having to reconcile those things. So, yeah, it's easy to second guess somebody else's choices based on what your life experience is. But, man, there's different Americas for different people.
There are. And, you know, we were in a small group last night talking about this very thing. And, you know, I'm coming to a place that, you know, and there are things even that you get scared to talk about because people have such strong feelings about it. But I mean, to be honest with you, I wish my wife was here, because we'll talk about it again when she's on. And you know, when Black Lives Matter first, you know, that movement first began.
Yeah.
You know, my first reaction, and I'm not proud of this reaction, and I've traced now sort of where some of this started in me. As a educator, youth pastor, whatever, you know, you have this, we're teaching kids that you are empowered.
Yeah.
And that you are also then responsible. And that you make your choices. No matter what happens in your life, you have a choice to make. And I still believe that. I think that's fine. And so somehow, though, that, I think, became so ingrained that – and the second thing is as a history teacher, a history guy, I mean, dude, I'm so anti-racism. I used to, you've heard me. I will blister people right. over racism. Right. Like, I don't want to hear a racist joke. I don't want, like, dude, no, there's no place for this. And so because I feel so strongly about that and I feel personally responsible for the choices that I make, the idea of white privilege felt so indicting to me.
Yeah.
That, and I had done nothing. I had done nothing like to support it.
Right.
And so I don't want to be held responsible for 400 years of oppression when, guys, I wasn't there. You right. know, like you can't, it's kind of like the atrocities of the church in the Middle Ages.
Yeah. Us taking responsibility for the Crusades or something.
Right. It's exactly what it was. Yeah. An identical issue to me. Like, guys, yeah. okay, that's wrong. And by the way, the true Christians, you know, or those who understood it was wrong, as Tim Keller talks about this in The Reason for God in that book, that, guys, yeah, atrocities were committed under the church. And by the way, that's why people rose up and reformed it.
Yeah.
Because this was not what Christianity was ever about.
Right.
And so they were the reason you call them atrocities is they're the opposite of what Christianity truly was.
Yeah.
When you're doing the things under the – no matter whether under the Christian flag or not, that's why those spoke out against it sometimes and lost their lives for it. And so – but to say that, you know, just because something was done in the wrong name. So I didn't want to feel responsible for that because it's too great of a load to carry. And the thing my wife really said to me one night, we were talking about it, and she said, you know, the one thing, John, that you're not doing right now is you're not listening to what that movement is saying.
Yeah.
They're trying to tell you something and you're not hearing it because of, and that's when, and let's call it what it is. That's when I realized, oh, I have bias.
Yeah.
Like, bias sounds like this huge, dirty word, and it can be, but I have something, I have prejudice, not in a racial sense of
right.
I'm intentionally out because of,
yeah.
I am just literally the word, I am prejudging.
You have a locked-in belief system
right.
based on your experiences that you think should apply to all people.
Right.
And when you realize, well, this can't apply to everybody because not everybody's had your experience. You think, well, but wait a minute. This has to work because it's all I've ever known. Same with, like, people who are just, like, free market capitalists to the core. Capitalism, whatever. Everything that when we talk about everything, they'll just immediately play the, oh, you want to be commies. You want everybody to have – if we have a social program, you're going to have a social program to manage that social – we'll just get into this thing where it's just free money for everybody. Nobody will work because there will be no incentives.
Right.
Instead of having a nuanced opinion that says – yes, let's have rewards for people who work hard. Let's have a system that's based on the free market. But also we should have fail safes. We shouldn't have people starving to death in America.
Yep.
And we can have both of those views without you calling me a communist.
Right. Before you just sum it all up with whatever yeah. your particular – and again, you're right. It comes from an experience
yeah.
usually. And whatever that is that causes me – a part of it is just modern culture. You know, we talked about it in the last podcast a little bit that there was a moment in time where ideals, or if you want to go as far as say faith, affected your mindset. And today, your mindset is the highest reality.
Yeah.
In fact, we protect it.
Yeah.
So don't say anything that might contradict someone else's mindset, which is going to be based upon their own experiences in general. Above all, experience
right.
is now the highest form of knowledge. In fact, we even have some things in the Christian world will say, well, you know, a man with an experience is gonna have the upper hand on a man with a theory every time.
Right.
And we're saying that in that if I've experienced, you know, things with Christ, then no matter what it is, and there's a truth to that. But when you take that experience and you blanket it as if it is higher than other people's experiences.
Right.
That is really – there's such an entitlement and such a – in yeah. my case, an arrogance to that that I wasn't aware I had. Yeah. And there are those – I'm guarantee you, I have friends who will listen. And because I'm not bashing Black Lives Matter,
right,
even though they don't consider themselves racist, but like they're going to struggle. They're going to struggle with this conversation.
Right, that you've gone left.
Yeah. And you want to go
– you've let the liberals take over.
And I'm going – in fact, in my buddy Ty Wagner in Watermark, you know, in Dallas, Texas, you know, he did a video on this. And I encourage you to go look it up, Real Truth Real Quick. Real Truth Real Quick. not a sponsor.
Real Truth Real Quick is about neck injuries and how to avoid terrible neck pain.
It's horrible, really. And – you know, he had a very similar story
yeah.
in his to mine. And he had a friend in a pastor with a PhD pastor in mm-hmm. Texas of one of the Black churches, and they sat down. they had the wherewithal to go sit down and talk to somebody
yeah.
when this all began happening. What's our best response here? And they came to the same conclusion that, you know, I came to, and that's that, guys, if you're just asking, do all lives matter? If that's your response, you know, and that was my first thing. Well, of course, all lives matter. To think, though, that you have to pick one or the other. So when they were doing the presidential debates, do all lives matter or do black – like right. those are the only two choices, you know.
Yeah.
And it was like he said – and I heard a blogger have a great example. To ask the question in response to someone who's asking you if you think black lives matter, to say all lives matter, to respond with all lives matter because I can't – is or to say I have to – that has to be a response.
Yeah.
Is the equivalent – I heard one guy say – of someone doing a cancer 5K, like they're starting a 5K for cancer,
yeah.
and you go and show up, all these people are there because they know somebody who has cancer, and you run in and grab the microphone and say, "Go, no, wait a second, guys, diabetes matters too.
Yeah.
Diabetes matters, and so does, like, yeah. you're not hearing what the purpose of this moment is. We're not saying that other lives yeah. don't matter.
It deserves the focus because it's just, we're at the place where it feels in America like black lives are under siege.
And if you don't agree with that, understand
yeah.
there are black people who feel that way, and it has to have validity
yeah.
that we at least listen. I have to at least listen. I don't get the right to tell somebody else
right.
that my experience yeah. trumps theirs.
Well, we talked last week a little bit about the dangers of tribalism and how we're getting down to this weird thing where we run to the next lowest common denominator of who we are, and it's out of fear almost. And that's easy for me to say as a white person, that we shouldn't just group up with people who look like us. And that should be because, like, all black people can't speak for all black people. That, I mean, I have tons of – it's a weird thing to say, but I do have tons of black friends. And they have completely differing views a lot. You know what I'm saying? So it's like – just like white people have different – so it's like – but I will say if you feel like your community is under siege, that is a unifying thing. That's the civil rights movement. That's what it was. So it's like – it's easy for me to say, like, well, why is tribalism a thing? It just is. It's just what it is. And I think that, I follow tons of black voices on Twitter, and they'll argue amongst themselves about what the next step should be.
Sure.
Some want this violent uprising. Some think that
there's a bias to think that
right.
that everyone of one race or one,
right.
you know, ethnicity is all going to have – they're all
right.
going to have the same – I mean, that in itself is a bias.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by it. And again, I've tried to make a point. I think it's a huge – this last couple of years has been a huge turning point. And it's a moment where the church is going to lose true relevance if we don't do the right things in this moment.
I
think it's a real watershed moment for us. And so – if we're going to listen, if we're actually going to, or if we're going to be this politics of nationalism and capitalism first and free market above all else, regardless or whatever, we're going to lose the moment. I think we got to listen and we got to be better. And I'm trying to do better. But again, that doesn't mean we won't stumble over things. That doesn't mean we don't get it wrong or the biases. It's messy. And gosh, I mean, I have some friends who are black comics who I speak to very frankly about matters of race because we can have those conversations. I'm like, why is this? What, you know? And I'll just ask the dumbest things as a dumb white yeah. person, and they're like merciful and graceful enough to be like, well, this is why. And I'll be like, oh. And somebody else overhearing that might be like, that's really ignorant. And I'll be like, yeah, that's why I asked. Now I'm not ignorant anymore.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, it comes down to the brilliance of what you're saying is for me, my greatest moment of ignorance was acting as if I had no ignorance.
Yeah.
It was to any of us to say, no, 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 it's offensive to me for you to say I have bias. Guys, bias in and of itself is not good or bad.
Right.
It's a reality. Bias by its definition means I see the world through the lens by which I've experienced it.
Yeah.
And anybody – it doesn't necessarily mean it's always a bad thing. It just means that you have a viewpoint. It's just another word for viewpoint. And to say that I don't have a viewpoint, I don't have a way that I prejudge a situation. In fact, that's just basic educational learning, is pre-existing schemata.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, when your baby learns the word dog, and that's what four-legged creature means.
Yeah.
And then the next time they see a cow for the first time.
It's a big dog.
Right. They go, look, big dog.
Right.
Okay. Well, they're prejudiced. That's what that means. They have a bias.
Yeah.
They don't know how to look at the cow without seeing it through the only thing they've ever experienced, which was the other four-legged animal, dog. And that's when you say, oh, no, honey, that's a cow. And now they have two different compartments in their mind, but they're still going to look at the next one through those two. And they see a horse, they're going to say cow. And, okay, well, that's a different kind. And learning means that I it's not wrong to look at something through the only lens I have. When it becomes wrong or when it becomes ignorance or it becomes something harmful is when I reach a point that I go, no. Now I've seen it all.
Yeah.
Now I know everything. And since I know everything, it's going to be offensive for you to say there's something I don't know. I think that truly – dude, I don't know if I shared that thing the other day. There's a Martin Luther King clip. Did you see the Martin Luther King clip that I shared? It was literally – from 61 maybe. Okay. And or 60, and it had been colorized, and it was just, man, I'll share it, and maybe we'll share it from the podcast Twitter account. But he's being interviewed in a church by an NBC reporter, and the NBC reporter just basically asked, you know, the question, is there something, let's just be honest, is there not just something about black people that's really the problem, you know? And like, is it just such an an offensive question? And he was so, like, who among us today would not be like, you shut your, you know?
Right.
And he was just like, he wasn't fazed.
Yeah.
You could tell this is not new to him. And he said, you know, and he talked about not just institutionalization of, you know, bad things in society, but he says, it is a cruel thing to tell a man with no boots to pull himself up by his bootstraps.
Right. Yeah.
He said it's a cruel thing to do so. And he went through a whole much more elaborate but I was like, oh my gosh. And in that moment it's for some reason, even myself, we'll gravitate and we'll celebrate Martin Luther King, but we can't hear still the conversation because we're assuming now that all is done. That all got done. You know, it's all fine.
Yeah.
And let's be really, really clear. This is not a, hey, guys, all policemen are out to, you know, may not honor.
No, that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Like, that's the thing. We have to, like, why do we have to disclaim?
But it's still got to be dealt with. It's like Chris Rock. I saw Chris Rock do his show at Zanies. He was preparing for his Netflix special, so he's working out material. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating to watch somebody like that. It was 30 feet from me in a room of 300 people watching Chris Rock. And I went to see him, even though I knew he was going to be a dirty comic and all that. I know Chris Rock's style. But he's paid to think for a living, and he's a genius. And I wanted to see what he would think about things. This was the day after the inauguration of Trump, by the way.
Wow.
So I couldn't wait to hear what he would say about Trump, which is fascinating. I was fascinating some of the things he said about left-wing people. When I know he's a left-wing person, he had some fascinating, like, barbs against them acting like Hillary really won because she won the popular vote. He came out against that idea and shut it down in, like, three sentences in a genius way. But one of the things he said about the cop thing, he said, I have a complicated relationship with the police because I'm famous. He said, and people say, like, well, it's not all cops. He goes, but the police is not the kind of job where we can put up with any bad apples. He goes, it's like you could say not all pilots crash planes into the ground. But the fact that we have some pilots doing it, we got to address it.
Yeah.
Because we're all getting on planes.
Yeah.
And you can't just say, well, not there's some bad apples, it's a few bad – well, we got to address these bad apples.
Agreed. Yeah,
so it's like we – I think that's the best way to put it is like, man, yes, we can say not all cops, but it's like then the ones who are doing it right we need to call them out, not have this blue – hide behind the blue shield of – because that's tribalism too.
It is. And you know what? And I have policemen friends, and I've never talked to a person who said – if that guy did that, then absolutely hold him accountable.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's, I think, in agreement. We need to be reasonably in agreement. It's the same thing with pastors. You know, like, look, guys, if a pastor has crossed the line into an area he should not be, Scripture calls us, it's an invitation.
Yeah.
It's an invitation to live real life together. That I am, and I think we miss these things as if it, like the idea. I'm going to use a term here, Johnny, and people are like freak out about it.
Oh boy,
church correction.
Okay.
Like how does that not just conjure beautiful images in your mind? Right. Things you can't. Oh, I would love. And so
love being corrected by the church.
Yeah, and so we've absolutely thrown church correction away.
Mm-hmm.
Or we see it in like cultish levels.
Yeah.
And we don't have any balance in between of what that really means. Could you imagine in a family if a parent threw away child correction?
Right. Or looked the other way like some churches do. It's like the two extremes. One, we excommunicate people, never to be heard from again.
Or we just don't
Or we look the other way because like he's the favorite son. Yeah. He's the talented one.
Yep. We have too much to lose. Or what's everyone going to think? And the truth is, lots of people just get up and walk out because, I can go next door where this is not going to be uncomfortable.
Right. Or I can at least have a year of fake, like, feeling like this church has arrived. They've got it together.
Right.
Till I realize, start seeing the cracks and the fatal flaws and everything.
You're like, wait a second.
Then just move to the next one. Yeah.
And you have no idea that it happened everywhere you've been. Like, you don't remember that for some reason. But that invitation from Scripture to be honest with one another.
Yeah.
To say, the Bible says, if you see someone stumbling, he who returns them to the path, like, it's a beautiful thing. If I see my kid walking towards the street,
yeah,
and even if they cry because they don't understand, and I think I'm not speaking, and I think we take church correction, we make it something like, well, that means we sent out a letter and everybody knew.
An email.
Right. The church is their community.
Yeah.
And so if they're not, they should be the people they're in close community.
Somebody should
with.
Stop you. It shouldn't get to the point where you fall. Like there's an old African proverb that says, don't look where you fell, look where you slipped.
Yeah, that's good.
And there's another African proverb that says, Hakuna Matata.
What a wonderful phrase.
I don't know why I'm bringing up African proverbs. Oh, my gosh. I'm so woke today. You can't get over how woke we are. But I like that because it means we see the fall and we're like, oh. But the fall has been in progress for months, usually when it happens. Yeah. And it meant that everybody ignored the signs or they didn't want to bring it up. They didn't want to make it awkward.
Yeah.
I had a comedian friend text me yesterday. He just said, are you okay? And I got kind of weirded. I was like, why would I, But I'm glad he did that.
He's checking on you.
Yeah. It's like, I don't talk to this guy all the time. And he's just like, are you doing okay? And it's like, there's not enough of that. There's not enough of that in the world.
My good friend, and I've talked about him before, my good friend who's a drug addict, who's in ministry today. His wife had to have a minor procedure, and I knew that they were. And I talked to both of them.
Yeah.
And she needed to have pain meds, and I said, "Hey, man, I'm going to call you every day. I'm going to check." And he said, "Dude, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, thanks for loving me.
Right.
And not because he's going to. We don't expect him to do it.
Right.
He's in a very overcoming place right now.
Yeah.
But I told her and him, what's the plan? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And because we should be. But there's a time in my life where if someone would have said, I would have been like, what do you think? I'm not changed. What do you think that I can't be trusted? It's like, guys, I can't be trusted. You know how I change?
Yeah.
The supernatural power of God works in my life. And what sustains that? In fact, we had a guy in our membership class today. He's an attorney. And we're talking about what community really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you go to law school. Man, you just learn so much stuff. I mean, you take the bar and you could wax eloquent about the law. And that's what the gospel is. I mean, you learn and constantly being, you're growing in it and learning and you're learning scripture. But do you want to know where you really go to the courtroom and practice it? That's with people.
Yeah.
That's where you enter into some relationship where the things that you're experiencing become a practice.
Yeah.
That's why, this is now my daily expectation, not just that we're going to read John 3:16 and we're going to say a prayer over the food, And I got so far to go here. You and I, by the way, just started reading the same devotional every day.
It's great.
And that was something I felt strongly because you're out on the road a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I'm loving you very well enough to say, but I don't want to just be like, hey, man, did you read your Bible today? Like, what if we
don't use that voice?
What if we could? Did
Reverend,
you?
Reverend Lovejoy.
Today I would like to, my favorite, back before I was saved and I watched The Simpsons, remember that?
I don't even think it's even that controversial anymore.
No, it's like nothing.
Simpsons is so vanilla compared to what else is out there.
Like I'm showing my kid The Simpsons in the womb. my favorite thing was when Homer had become great friends with the neighbor. Flanders.
Flanders, yeah.
Yeah. And so Flanders hated Homer, but Homer was like having all the favor and all the community at the time, you know, and, you know, and so, Ned Flanders. Yeah. And so he said, before I begin my
Reverend Lovejoy
said, before I begin my sermon today entitled What Ned Did, I would like to honor Homer Simpson for his community service. Yeah. You know, it was like such a, but anywho, I don't know how we got there.
I don't either.
It was Reverend, I did the Reverend Lovejoy voice.
Yeah.
But you know, instead of just saying, hey dude, and you know, and you and I talk about real life, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I want to be intentional. I don't want to have a system. I don't want to create, you know, that's what's so weird. It feels so inauthentic to people.
It's weird, you know? And I have a, I'm sensitive to that. I mean, I'm a little bit paranoid about stuff like that. Like if I feel like I'm being handled, right, or if I feel like I'm being put, okay, somebody's worried about me. And maybe that's bad. That's not good on my part. Like even, I was telling that to my agent. I had a meeting with my agent yesterday, and I was talking to him about something. I can't remember how it came up.
You just had to drop that, didn't you?
But I was talking, anyway, I'm very popular. Very important. But no, it was like, for some reason, it came up about accountability and how hard it is because, like, if I tell you that I'm struggling with my marriage, for instance, oh, it's tough right now, and Curry and I aren't talking and whatever, you know, we had a huge fight, whatever. Not only am I, like, opening up to you, but that is now running in the background of future conversations with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a vulnerability that people don't experience because they're just like, I would rather just try to handle this on my own. Because I don't want this 2 years from now, hey, how are things?
Right.
Things better?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just don't want to feel like they have that over you. So you don't even seek help.
See,
it's so weird, but people do it.
I think when people treat somebody different because they find out that they have a major life problem, it just proves that they've never practiced community.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so not surprised that I would expect you to not be surprised that my marriage has difficult moments. That's the problem. Yeah. Johnny, if we're talking about that.
We got to talk about that today.
I mean, that's the problem with us is the expectation. It goes back to biases and everything.
Right.
And it's the reason, by the way, forget just the reason people don't go to church. It's the reason people are not transformed by the idea of seeing what happens in church.
Yeah.
Because there is and how many people – I've had tons of people in groups say that to me. When I come into a church, I have an expectation that everybody else's life there is better than mine. They didn't struggle with porn that week.
Yeah.
They didn't struggle with arguing or yelling at their children. They didn't struggle with gambling, you know, an addiction. They didn't struggle with, you know, whatever that may be. And they all look like they don't. They just look like it. And it's the grandest lie that we – and I think that there's an enemy of our souls who perpetuates that. But I think it's the church who corroborates the story. Yeah. Because I'm going to not let you see anything else anyway. So from the sermon on, and that's really where I take responsibility because I'm one of the guys on the stage.
Yeah.
Like if I never let you see, and if I never let you see,
right,
then everybody else is going to just follow suit. I'm gonna as the
yeah.
as one of
you're
the
laying
shepherds,
a template for them to put on a mask too.
This is what it looks like, you know.
Right,
and so you're right. Then we become afraid that if I ever do share, because that's been maybe even your reality.
Yeah,
that I share and now someone's handling me.
They use it against me, whatever.
Yeah, or they're, you know, they won't trust me. I'm gonna tell you at this point in my life, I don't want a friend that I don't know dirt on them. And I don't,
yeah.
If my friends don't know what's really happening to me, then I don't think that I'm being a good friend or that they're the best friends that could be to me.
Yeah. I used to, man, when I started doing these big events with these big speakers or whatever, and in the Christian world or big bands or whatever, I think you have this weird sense of like, okay, well, they must have some secret thing. And I just don't feel that way anymore. I just am like, okay, well, I like to figure out like how they're making it all work, or how, you know what I'm saying? Like how they're, the things they're having to, the trade-offs and the family stuff and all that stuff. But I don't think like, oh, this person's got some secret handshake with God that I could never have because they wrote this book.
Called The Secret Handshake.
The Secret Handshake with God. Available from
John
Brunner. Available at HarperCollins Publishing, September 2019. But you know, yeah, but we were raised with that. We were raised in that thing of, televangelists or whatever. They've got the thing, or your pastor, he's got the prayer closet, and he's the one that gets, he's the oracle. He goes in and gets the thing. Yeah. He's the direction. He hands it out to the, and then you run, take it and run with it. Instead of like, oh, there's the priesthood of the believer, and we all can be close to God. You know, it's not that there shouldn't be a spiritual leadership, and we should help each other. But this idea that like, he's the one that has to be the all knowing. We set this pastor up to fail when we do that too.
Oh,
by the
yeah.
way. Because you put this pressure on him and no accountability, because it's like, oh, sure, you're going on a golf weekend? Sure, I'm sure everything's fine
right.
with your marriage. I'm sure that's not an affair. Like, we just let it go until, like you said, it's like, where did you slip, not where did you fall? And we slip and we take accountability away. We remove things.
Well, either he doesn't believe, you know, I think only fools believe their own press release. I mean, yeah. My gosh, if you believe your own bio, even in your company website, I mean, none of us would.
Right.
Let me just tell you, don't.
Yeah, I read a great quote from John Acuff today about a story he did for the New York Times. And he was talking about fear of success, and which reminded me of that story that the kid did on you when you were a youth pastor. They did their senior or their 10th grade report.
I still have that.
And it said, John Driver. It was all about you. And the last sentence was like, John Driver, who is afraid of success, failure, and snakes. That's the big three. And equally 33% of those things. And I think about that because I feel like I definitely have a fear of success. I'm afraid of being nothing. I'm afraid of being insignificant
yeah.
or wasting, squandering. That's a huge fear of mine. But I'm also afraid of like that I don't deserve good things. That's what he said. He said, fear of failure is rooted in the belief that you do not deserve good things. Or feel your fear of success. Fear of success is rooted in the fear, the belief that you do not deserve good things. And so when you get good things, you're kind of like looking around. I compared it to, I think we talked about this before, but the movie Carrie. You ever seen Carrie? You don't watch horror movies.
I don't.
But you know the gist? Hey, Carrie is this girl who's different, and she doesn't know why. And ends up she has telekinetic powers, but that's...
Right. Who among us?
Right. But anyway, she's different. She's made fun of. She's teased every day, blah, blah, blah. And so as a big joke, the popular kids make her the prom queen. And so as she walks on the stage, she's and then this music's playing, beautiful music, and they've rigged up this bucket of pig blood above her in the rafters, and they're pulling on the rope. The minute she reaches the crescendo of like acceptance in her life, finally, people love me, and they all know it's getting ready to, that's the feeling I feel sometimes when things are going good. And it's hard to explain to people, but it's like, yeah, this is fine, but they're not laughing for the right reasons, or they... You know what I'm saying? This isn't real, or I don't deserve this. And so that was an interesting quote. I was fascinated by that. I'm interested to read the story, but I don't know.
I think that, dude, your idea of, you know, go back to where you slipped, not where you know where you fell.
Yeah.
Because that we're on it. I am convinced. In fact, God's Secret Handshake, that's the book, John.
That's the
I'm telling you, God's, I could write a book on this very thing.
Secret handshake.
Yeah.
And but it'll sound like you're pro
exactly.
handshake.
That's the point. It would draw people in. They'll be like, what? There's a God's secret handshake? And you're like,
I need to know about this.
Yeah. Because I believe people really believe they're people. I have this whole thing about what you think you believe and what you really believe.
Yeah.
You know, and
don't like, the Freemasons actually have secret handshakes that are like religious? Okay, go ahead.
They do. But yeah,
they really do believe in a God's secret.
But
look, we're going to steal the Declaration of Independence, John.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, still got a few big coughs today. Not as bad as last week. But,
oh my gosh!
My grandfather told me, he was 89. He said to me one day last year, he said, "You know, John," he goes, "everybody's sitting in church today. He said, they don't. The reason he's talking about new worship songs,
mm-hmm.
which you know, I thought, oh, here it comes." He was like, you know, these worship songs, I was sitting there, you know, and he has to sit down. And so I was listening, you know, I thought, oh, he's just going to bash, you know, the newfangled, you know, music. And he goes, you know what I was thinking? These are the most beautiful lyrics. I mean, just beautiful. He goes, I had one problem with him, John. I said, what, Papa? He said, we don't believe him.
Wow.
And I said, what do you mean? And he said, everybody's sitting there singing these things. We don't really believe him. He said, we agree with him.
Yeah.
But there's a big difference between agreeing with it and really believing it.
Yeah.
If you really believed everything you were singing, you know, and it really did. It was one of the most profound things I've ever heard. And so to me, that's a great way to define the thing that I think I believe
mm-hmm.
and the thing I actually believe, which, again, I thought I
believed. Or the things you wish you believed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I thought I believed that I had no bias, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then I find out, oh, actually, I do. My belief systems are this way. I think that thing about that everyone else or certain people have that secret handshake with God.
Yeah.
Is the number one thing among believers, and we're calling them that. Our friends, yeah. we were in that, you know, email devotional group. When I sit down with dudes especially, it's a constant. I literally didn't want to chime in because you all have something better to say than me, and what if I sound stupid, or what if I say it wrong, or what if I don't know the right scripture, what if my theology's off, what if my – we're terrified.
Yeah.
Like of being – and you called it success, you know, from the Acuff quote, but we're terrified of the idea that God might just be okay with us.
Yeah.
And so we don't ever grow and learn like that. And again, the problem is we're not talking about those things to say, hey, dude, what if you were wrong? What if you said something dumb? Let's play that scenario out. What if your theology was off? And like, if you don't have an environment where that's okay to happen, yeah. either because you're unwilling to be vulnerable enough to step out, to grow and to learn, or the people around you are not willing enough to gently say, yeah. dude, that's a great thought. Let me sharpen it. Mm-hmm. Because there's rarely a thought that's just completely wrong, you know. Yeah. But it's all or nothing. So we think, well, my thoughts are as dumb, you know, well, Jesus and Satan are cousins. And like most people's theology is not that far, you know.
No.
It's just but these nuances, back to your word, nuances are how we grow. And I mean, if I don't have an intentional place in my life to say, who is hearing me get it wrong? Who is hearing me who loves me enough
right.
not to just go – and I wish I was a better communicator. In some ways, I feel like a failure right now because all my jobs in life are communication, and I feel like I'm not saying it right. To say that I don't – when I say who in my life is sharpening me, someone hears a come to Jesus meeting, which again, I'm on a mission – to change come to Jesus meetings to something positive.
To be a good thing.
Because why in the world that's the worst thing in the world? It's just hilarious. It's just a reflection of our poor gospel theology. You know?
The Cavaliers lost 3 in a row and had to come to Jesus meeting with Coach Teron Lew today.
Come to Jesus meetings are the best thing that ever happened to you.
That's right.
But so, you know, but this idea.
You just
though,
rewrote my altar call for my Sunday service.
Come on, man.
We're about to have a come to Jesus meeting.
Why in the world is that bad to us? I don't know. It's because we really think Jesus is out to get us.
Yeah.
And, you know, Todd Wagner says, Jesus is not out to rip you off. He's out to set you free. That's what he wants. And you know what? You agree with that. It sounds awesome. And you'll listen to this podcast and you'll go, well, that's great. And you won't believe it. I don't believe it, Johnny. Like,
part of it's like, we don't believe we have the value. Like, it's God instilled value. But we still feel like, yeah, but I'm not going to be enough. If he knew the real me. Like, we almost believe the root of it is that we don't really believe God knows the real us. So we still think we can hide.
Absolutely. It's Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
Like, God can't see you behind those trees he created.
Yeah, I used to say that sometimes when I would do, like, a Sunday service. I would say, where are you? Mm-hmm. You know, because that's what God said to Adam and Eve. Said, where are you? He knew where they were.
He didn't have to ask.
Yeah. He knew where they were.
Giving them a chance to be honest about where they are.
Yeah, and so that's the question. That's always the question. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, we talk about when I do sermons sometimes or I do services, I want to see what the culture is. Like, what is your culture when it comes to, like, call and response at the end of a service? Because, like, if you just go in and they're not everybody walks down to the front church, you don't want to be that guy. So I try to, like, where are you at? Do you guys pray at your seat? What do you do? Mm-hmm. But I do think when we get to the culture now where churches – just want to have like a motivational speech and they don't even give them something to think about on the way home, or they don't say, based on what we've just talked about, let's make a decision today. Even if it's just a decision that we're going to be better husbands or wives, or we're going to seal this moment. I think it's so important that we do that because that's a dying thing.
If you don't, you know, we came to a place church culture wise where, but, you know, when you were in my youth ministry, if you remember, I got an altar call of not necessarily come front, but a response thing every time. And eventually that became such a practice that it almost stopped having effectiveness.
Right.
So as a speaker now, I try to mix it up.
Yeah.
Remember the day I did the reverse altar call?
Yeah. No, you told me about it, though, and I liked it, the idea that, like
– it was like instead of like, okay, it was like a message that had a real salvation, you know, mm-hmm. sort of response. And I was like, hey, here's the deal. I want everybody to close your eyes. You know, I said, if you're a fully devoted follower of Jesus, you agree with everything I said today and you want Christ to continue to do those things in your life. You know, here's what I want you to do. I want you to stand. No. Yes. I want you to stand. Or I want, you know, okay, great. But I want you to leave your eyes closed. I want you to stand and leave your eyes closed.
Yeah.
I don't want to, because this should be easy.
Right.
Now, all of you, I want you to know, no one can see you. If you're not standing, I don't want you to stand. I just want you to open your eyes. And I want you to see the community of faith that is wholeheartedly for you.
Yeah.
Is saying that they're not, no one wants you to feel isolated. Like this, everybody is dying for you to make this decision and support you in it if this is where you feel. Because we've isolated, like it's like a,
right.
And then there's the person, there's always a person. Well, yes, but if they can't stand in that moment for God, yeah. Then how will they stand? And it's like, you know, I agree about
how
with
you,
that.
Yeah, sometimes it's about how you frame it.
But should we make them take a walk of shame?
Right.
Like in front of all the believers. Yeah. If you're going to, we all have a walk of shame. Yeah. Let's take it together.
Right.
Like that's the gospel. Let's take it together.
Michael Jr. used to talk to me about this, comedian who does like so many Sunday services now and is a really, really great presenter of the gospel and is a comedian. But he told me some stuff that he'd gone through and had, that he'd learned. And one of them was, he said, the best advice I could give you was, he goes, I have people raise their hand. I would say, if you want to accept Christ, raise your hand. You can put it right back down. Just raise your hand so I can see it. You can put it right back down. He said, I realized after doing that for about a month that I was sending the signal that raising your hand was bad.
Right. Right.
You raise it, but you put it right back down.
No one.
And he said, I just stopped doing that. And I made it more of a point of like, this is your moment. I didn't say keep it up. I just said, raise your hand. But he goes, this idea that he made it this almost shameful thing.
Yeah.
And there's enough shame in the world. We all know that. And that's part of the deal. We hide. Just like Adam and Eve, but I don't know, man. It's fascinating, and there's not a right or wrong way, but I do think like not even just a salvation thing, but I do think there should be a. We called it for a while to go box. You used to do this thing where we said, "Here's your to go box for today. Here's the stuff."
And
that
became a new tradition,
right? So here's the thing I want you to take with you, think about or whatever. And I don't know. I chew on that stuff, but I travel a lot. Maybe it's my experience is different in church than most people now.
I think that it's all you're. I always want people to, if nothing else, hey, pray. Let's pray. You where you are right now. If you need to, you need a response, we're going to be here. Sometimes we do a lot of invitations in the middle of a service, like during a time of worship. Hey, you know, if you got a major need, if you want people to pray for you, want to be, and I think there's a time for that. And sometimes we do it at the end of a service. And sometimes it's a, you know, I just taught on John chapter 4 or whatever, and you know, I want you to go home and. Pray, think. We're going to pray right now. If you want to talk, we're here. Kind of thing. If you need something, you know, making that availability, because so it's always some sort of response. The response is so important.
Yeah.
But what I don't want, though, is the response always to be for the crisis person or the unbeliever. And it's like, guys, the reason the unbelievers don't respond is because the believers don't respond. It's not our normal practice. Like, you should be the most responsive people.
Yeah, there's a sanctification
gospel.
Process where we're all being molded day by day. There was a great meme of that. I don't know, we're closing, but there was a great meme of that, and it said, sanctification. This is sanctification in a nutshell. It was like a video, and the video was a loop of a guy falling down an up escalator. I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's like we're falling, but we're still being carried up. We're being carried by something that's not a force of our own.
Yep.
We fall all the time, but we're still going to make. We're going to make it.
Yep.
Up eventually.
You have a role, but it's not all up to you.
Yeah.
And that's such a.
And when you try to do it on your own, you fall more. It's going to be even worse.
Yeah.
And you take other people down with you.
Yep.
I mean, it's a perfect analogy.
That's good.
So
that's good. Well, man, hey, great discussions today. We had a lot of things, and I hope if you're listening out there
that you're. Preparing your emails.
I do encourage you, you know, what we always want to do, man, we want to grow. We want to talk. And everything we share is from our place of God knows, Johnny, I'm broken, man. I'm broken. And God's been, you know, faithful and full of grace towards me. And that's just a story that I'm going to get to keep on walking out. So
yep.
Where are you going this weekend?
I'm going to Columbia, South Carolina.
Oh.
See my buddy Marty.
Oh, that'd be fun. fun.
MartySimpson.com.
There you go.
Yeah, not a sponsor, no, but he's funny.
But he could be.
Could Marty. Be. We'd love to see it. Did I tell you he sponsored his kid's baseball team 1 year? So it was the MartySimpson.com Braves or whatever. Oh, really? So he could put it on the little thing on the uniform. It's so dumb.
That's great. You'll be looking for the God's Secret Handshake.
Absolutely. Coming to you soon from Pendant Publishing.
Well, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next time on...
Talk About That.
Feeling stressed? Let's take better care of you. I'm Bonnie Gray, the host of Breathe, the Stress Less podcast. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.